Yo.
What's going on, Chip?
You doing, sir?
Ready to roll?
I am, man. How you doing?
Always good, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing just fine, my man. I just want to tell you, man, thanks for doing this with me.
Are you crazy, man? I'm a huge fan. This is such an honor on my end.
Yeah, you're a New Yorker, right?
New Yorker, born and bred, baby.
Yeah, I listened to a little bit of the show you did with Kelly Pavlik. I'm actually currently in Colorado Springs.
How you
This
doing
is
there?
where Terrence Crawford does his training camps. And came out here to just see him. This will probably be the last time I see him before the week of his fight. And I don't know if you're aware, but I have a suit line. So we're gonna fit him in a suit.
Oh.
It's a tailor-made suit. And I'm hoping to get at least 30 minutes with him and then 15, 20 minutes with the rest of his team.
I'm glad you brought up the outside ventures because a lot of boxers fight and then they fade away. You're known now. When people say
Yeah.
Sean Porter, it's okay, the champ, legendary career, but then it's also podcaster and stuff and commentary. Is it weird how much your podcast took off?
This is what God wants for me. This is my route. This is what I'm designed to do. I was a athlete, blessed enough to be a professional athlete, but athletics has never been all of only thing I've been about. And I think that it all came around, just timing was perfect for me. You know, it's just the funniest thing. If the pandemic hadn't happened, I'm not sure if I would be doing, I might be doing a podcast now, but I
Okay.
probably wouldn't have started until I retired.
That's interesting. And I love your format. And I have to ask you, do you like just doing fight commentary? Because you had the interview with Pac-Man, Manny Pacquiao, and the sit down. And besides the admiration of two legends talking, do you like doing the interview process or do you like just breaking down fights?
I love breaking down fights. I
Okay.
love right there in the moment, making it happen. Something that God revealed to me about 2 years ago is I'm a storyteller.
I love it.
And so I have the ability, unlike other people who interview athletes, entertainers, and stuff like that, for me, it's like I meet everybody in the middle. Whereas you have never been in the ring, you know?
Whoa,
I'm
whoa,
not
whoa! I
gonna
don't,
be.
Sean. Have you seen me? It looks like I might have been in the ring a little.
I didn't know. I
I'm
know.
just kidding.
No footage. So that's why I love doing the interviews, the sit downs, the intimate interviews, because I know that I have a mind to find something that other journalists aren't able to find.
It's good because. Obviously, you never talk down to someone, but it's crazy because even your commentary, you're always so fair. And that's why I always love listening to you and the podcasting. You're never trying to one up somebody like, well, I did this. You are in the same level, like, hey, bro, I want to, and you break down stuff that people don't talk about. Like, I'm going to talk about you growing up in Ohio and getting into boxing. You get right down to the boxing stuff and you do a lot of mental stuff with the boxers, which I love that you break down, man.
All right. I that's a part of me, man. The psychology is just, I understand people and I know people. And I tell you, here's the funny thing. Even though I didn't grow up watching boxing was such a part of my life that when I wasn't doing it directly, I didn't want to be around it at all. But my dad would have fights on, or he would go to somebody's house and he'd take me with him to watch fights. And I'd like be watching with a half eye. But I was able to hear, and I watched these, and I'm like, you're not calling the whole fight. You're just saying what this guy is doing. You're not talking about both guys. And so, funny thing, man, when I was young, I knew that I wanted to do broadcasting. And
Okay.
I always said, when I do it at a young age, when I do it, I'm going to talk about both people. I'm not going to talk about just one guy. And I always felt like they were told who to talk about and what to say about them. And I kind of had this third eye, like, let me find out if they're gonna, tell me what I should be saying. It's never happened to me. It's never happened to me that a producer or a director has told me, hey, these are the notes we want you to speak on tonight or anything like that. And I'm kind of notorious for the fight between Madrimov and Crawford,
mm-hmm.
where I got three other guys next to me, and they're seeing something completely different, honestly, from what I believe is actually happening. And I'm like, I literally thought to myself, I'm like, well, I wasn't giving the cue codes, the cue cards to come over here and speak about this. Like, why are they so one-sided in this? And what I realized was, it's just psychologically, when somebody isn't doing what you expect them to do, or it isn't happening the way you think it's supposed to happen, psychologically, your mind turns on to something that's not true. You think that Madrimov is beating Terrence Crawford because Terrence Crawford doesn't look like Terrence Crawford. A lot of people had me beating Terrence, like hands down before the stoppage. And I went back and watched the fight one time. And I'm like, well, I think I was up about one round, maybe five rounds, that most people thought that I was up. But you guys think that because he's struggling, he's losing. It's not always the case.
There was a fight. I wish I would have did a little better research about it. Whoever was fighting was winning. You're doing commentary, and you're talking about the guy who was losing, which was – it's kind of a first in boxing. It's always like, here we go. Pacquiao's doing this, but they're never talking about Cotto getting hit. And now you went like, Cotto needs to do this. And I always thought like, wow, I'm a huge fan, but you gave me a different perspective of it. Before the fight, Sean, do you go in there and make a lot of notes and stuff, do a lot of homework?
Do a lot of homework. I like to just be familiar with all of it. And that's the competitor in me. And again, that's what makes me kind of unique and one of a kind. When I started working with Fox, I marveled at these guys that I'm working with, because I listen to you, I watch you, and I'm like, now I'm working next to you. And the competitor in me would think to myself, what if he goes on a bathroom break and we have to come out? Like, you know, I have to be able to do everybody's job. That's just how I am. And so I like to be able to broadcast and commentate from a perspective of the X's and O's, but also I like to sound smart and know it all. So when you throw out a random statistic that only you're supposed to know, and I'm supposed to just comment on, you know, the right hand and why it's landing, I'm gonna, you know, throw those numbers right back at you. So I like to know a little bit about everything. Yeah.
Back to the podcast, The Port Away, which is such a sick view, such a sick watch. Any dream guests that you want to have on?
So many.
Like who do you want on?
There's so many. And funny thing is, started going to fights, and my dad's like, the more we're at the fights, the more interviews we get, the more people see us and stuff like that. Cool. Start rising up the rankings, and now they're giving us seats so that we're being seen on TV and stuff like that. Get opportunities to like sit in front of Shaquille O'Neal, and I get to see Jamie Foxx at fights and all of these rappers and entertainers. And what I learned was, this is everybody's favorite sport. The one common denominator when it comes to sports and other entertainers is boxing. Not every other entertainer watches basketball and football and MLS and the list goes on, but everybody watches boxing. So that's what I'm trying to do with the Port Away podcast, is converge and show people that you're a big fan of Jamie Foxx and you love Jamie Foxx films. You don't watch boxing, but once you find out that Fox loves boxing and why he loves boxing, now you're interested because he's interested, you know? So the Jamie Foxx, the Shaquille O'Neal, the LeBron James, I tried to get LeBron's son on the show when he got drafted into the NBA, and okay. I wasn't able to get his son. But it's kind of – I want the people on the boxing channel that you would never expect to be on the boxing channel.
That's interesting, man. We're going to go now to Cleveland. You grew up in Ohio, right?
Yeah, Northeast Ohio. Yes, sir.
You said you listened to a little bit of my Kelly Pavlik interview. Are you a Browns fan or Bengals fan?
I would be a Browns fan. Northeast Ohio.
Do you live and die with them? Because I know you were a football guy. Do you live and die with them, or are you just giving up at this point, like me with my Knicks?
I'm living and I'm dying with them. it kind of is what it is. I didn't watch the preseason game yesterday. I'm getting text messages, and we, as far back as I can remember, we always look good in preseason.
So always looking like, from the Tim Couch days, Sean.
Rather boycott preseason because those wins don't matter, and see what we can do in the real season.
I asked Kelly the same question. You know this. You asked me if I'm from New York. New York is bagels and pizza and shit like that. When you're gone, you're in Colorado, you're here. What are you looking for when you come back? Like, I need what food from Ohio?
I think one, and I know that LeBron James put quite a few actors and on this restaurant, Swenson's.
Okay.
Swenson's has a burger that they got their secret sauce. And Swenson's really does, it's set apart from any other sandwich. You can't eat a Swenson's Galley Boy and compare that to, you can't compare it to anything.
Okay.
Wendy's, McDonald's, you can't compare it to anything. The Galley Boy, it's in its own lane.
So that's your, when you're gone, you want to come back and get that.
And Bob Evans. Familiar with Bob Evans?
Of course, I know Bob Evans, of course.
Gotta have Bob Evans. That's the style all day and all night.
Two questions about nicknames. Showtime, how does that name come out? Obviously, you're a flashy dude. You're good on the mic. Who gave you that nickname?
My dad.
How old were you?
There's a true story about this nickname that I have that I'm not going to tell. But I will say this. It's a really intimate story that will be shared one day. But my dad boxed when he was younger, and he didn't box for a very long time. But in the time that he did box, he would go to the gym in Cleveland. Jeff Stoudemire, who's known for fighting Sugar Ray Leonard, my dad tells the story. He would go to the gym, and Jeff Stoudemire was the only boxer at the gym who had his name on his locker, and the name on that locker was Showtime.
Really?
Wow, there's, I think, a lot of other entertainers and athletes that try to adopt that name, Showtime.
Mm-hmm.
We do believe that I embody Showtime.
Well, that's your nickname. Everyone knows you as Showtime Porter.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's people who get a nickname, and there's people who don't live up to their nickname. There was another boxer who had the name Showtime, and you know, respectfully never seen him, you know? So, but there's other people in other, you know, industries or whatever that they don't really live up to or resemble. I really do think that in that name, Showtime, you find Showtime Sean Porter.
When you're called champ, the way I started the interview, it never gets old, right? No matter where you are, supermarket, library, church, at the events, when you hear champ, you're like, yeah, I am the champ. There's not a better feeling in the world, right?
When I have a chance, I don't do it often, but okay, when I recognize that I'm going to be in the atmosphere of somebody for a long time, I tell those people, don't call me champ. Call me Showtime or call me Sean. The question is always why,
mm-hmm,
and the answer is always, well, there's going to be a million champs. There's already been a million, and there's going to be a million more. There's only one Showtime. There's only one Sean Porter. You know, so I appreciate the respect, but just call me Showtime or call me Sean. That's what I tell everybody.
That's a fair answer. You know what I loved so much doing research on you? Because I knew about your professional career, illustrious, Hall of Fame worthy. Your amateur career is kind of on that level too, man.
My career as a whole is crazy. Outside of Floyd Mayweather and Miguel Cotto, couple of other, I've been in the ring with literally everybody.
And you never turned a fight down. That's why your name is so good.
I've even been in the ring with Chad Dawson at like the age of 18 or 19. I've been in the ring with Layla Ali at like the age of 18, 19. I've been in the ring with everybody.
Your reputation is such that you never turned down the fight. You never ran from a fight. You never waited for a fight to get old and stuff. But doing the research, I remember hearing this on one of your fights that you beat Usyk in one of the fights. And now, is it weird seeing him now, like you said, you were the champ. I know you don't show time and stuff, but seeing him now, the level he's at, and you beat him in the amateur rank, that is pretty cool though.
it's super, super, like, it's funny. People will be like, you know, you beat the heavyweight world champion of the world. And I'm like, well, I beat him when he was 165 pounds. You know what I mean? Like, I beat him when we were 21 years old. We're 20 years old. Like, I didn't beat that guy. You know, so it's, for me, it's like just really cool to see him grow and become the man and the athlete that he is. There's so many of us, like Terrence here. We've known each other since we were about 16 years old, and we've seen each other at tournaments since we were 10, 11 years old. We've known each other since we were kids, literally. And so for a lot of guys, it's just special to see how we've all grown. And, you know, obviously we'll hope that everybody's blossomed and done extremely well. That's not always the case, but Usyk, it's like, it's just like, wow. Like, you know, and he gives me this respect that it's funny, man. I'm looking for the video of that fight, and I'm going to find it one day. When I find it, the first time that it'll be seen in public will be when he and I are watching that fight together.
On the podcast, doing a play-by-play. That's what you need to do. A live watch, Sean. That's what you need to do.
There it is. And he gives me this respect that I really do feel that he knows. Like, I came to America, I fought Sean Porter, and like when I went to England and I fought their gold medalist, James DeGaulle.
Okay.
When I fought DeGaulle, was like, they ran the score up and it wasn't. But the fight that I had with Oleksandr Usyk, the kind of respect he gives me, it makes me feel like he knows that he didn't just come to America and get gypped out of a decision. Like, he had a really good boxing match with me, and I think he realizes that, you know?
I want to talk more about boxing, but you brought up Crawford again. Tell me about the suit game now. So you're doing customized suits? Tell me about this.
Yes, this is a tailored suit. I've been doing tailored suits for myself since 2014. I'm known for wearing my suits. Well before I started doing the broadcasting, I was already wearing suits to fights, the only boxer doing it. And I love suits.
Okay.
And then the other side of that is nobody else was doing it. So how do I separate myself from everybody else? You wear suits. I get with my tailor, and now we start customizing and tailoring the suits. And he was telling me about 3 years ago, like, you should start a line, you should start a line. And we went on ahead and did that. And so with Crawford, man, this is a gift to Crawford. You know, we've been good friends for a long time. And a tailored suit is not easy to come by, especially when you can get it from someone that's from your industry. So that's what this is, man. It's a tailored suit. The tagline for our suit business is, we fit you to fit you. And basically what that means is, whatever you're comfortable in, whatever color you like, whatever style you like, we put you in that. We don't put you in a Sean Porter suit that you've seen me in on TV. We have access to over 1,000 fabrics. We have access to fabrics from Scotland, fabrics from Turkey. We even do shoes. We do belts. We do the whole nine. And that's what we do. And the other side of all that is, the name of the suit business is Sean Porter Suits and Services. Everything that I do is connected to ministry. And the biggest part of my ministry is being able to serve. That's what I believe we're all here to do. We're all here to serve one another. So suits and services, we come to you. We bring it all to you, and we fit you where you're at.
Now you're going to make me go down not boxing route. Tell me about the ministry you're at. Were you always in that? Always a religious guy or a faithful guy?
Always been a religious, faithful man. Mm-hmm. Always known that there was more to life than waking up and going to sleep and, you know, obviously everything that you do in between. For me, I tell people all the time, you give me 5 seconds, I'll show you God. Because we can go as simple as my boxing career. Mm-hmm. I was just watching a clip of Roy Jones talk about how Floyd Mayweather is not in his top five.
I saw that. Okay, I saw that on YouTube. I saw the same clip.
He talks about how Floyd has never fought anybody on his level. Mm-hmm. I literally just watched that before I got on here with you. And I said, well, I have to be a Hall of Famer, because even though I didn't beat Keith Thurman, even though I didn't beat Kell Brook, even though I didn't beat Errol Spence Jr., even though I didn't beat Terrence Crawford, I'm like one of the only guys out there that's fought everybody at their prime.
Everyone.
And created a great, exciting fight. When it was ending, you really didn't know who won that fight until the hand was raised, you know? And that's because of timing. And timing is something that we don't control. There's something stronger, more graceful. There's a presence that controls the time. And if you're doing the right things, if you're living the right way, if you're believing the right things and having faith in all those sorts of things, you end up where I'm at. You end up where I am at. I said when I was a kid that I was going to be where I'm at right now.
And you followed that path.
I have a film that I'm waiting to get funded. This is a $6 million budget feature film, completely fictional film. I knew that I was going to get into movies when I was 16 years old. I've had a couple movies come my way. Everyone wanted me to do a cameo.
Okay.
And one movie that came my way, I actually ended up being able to get on the line and have a phone conversation with the writer. The writer asked me if I was interested. I said, thank you. But this isn't what I see for myself when I get into film. When I get into film, I want a respectable role. I want a prominent role. I don't have to have the lead role, but I want a role and I want to portray a character. I don't want to be myself. The writer tells me, and I was early in my professional career, so I was probably about 22 or 23 at this point in time. The writer tells me, sir, there are people who have studied this their entire lives and don't get those sorts of roles. Thank you. Good luck. I hope you get what you want. And I'm going to be the lead in this $6 million budget film because I knew, had faith in what God showed me, God told me that I was capable of doing.
Is that film already, the works are going on or no?
We are still waiting on the funding. We have actors in place. We
have a director?
Everything. The writer will be the director.
I grew up playing baseball my whole life with Ronaldo Marcus Green. He's one of my closest friends, and he's the one who directed One Love, the Bob Marley movie that just came out, and King Richard about Serena Williams' father. It's one of my best friends. And wow. He's always looking for random people, so maybe I'll get you guys talking. He's one of my best friends.
Absolutely.
I'm serious. When we hang up, I'll link you guys up. He's always he's doing some big things, man.
That would be beautiful, man. Thank you for that.
Yeah, then you could throw me in the movie. Sean, I want to – you mentioned like a blueprint and stuff and a path. I want to just pivot real quick back to boxing, not on everything, because I love hearing everything else about you. Your record when you turned pro in October of 08, you fought like October, November, December, January, February, March. That heavy workload, was that all in you and your pops' plan? Or was that like, hey, I just ring time? No. Oh, it was. That was the blueprint.
We signed with Prize Fight Promotions, I think, down in the South. We signed with them because we had talked, or my dad had talked to Barry Hunter, and Barry had Anthony and Lamont Peterson signed with Prize Fight. And here was the understanding. Prize Fight has a casino that they do all of their boxing events out of. They do up to 8 boxing events a year, and you basically can fight whenever you want to. And my dad's thing was, he was like on this race to get 10 fights in 1 year. That was something that Mike Tyson had done. And my mm-hmm. dad wanted to get 10 fights in 1 year, and we were knocking them out very fast. And, you know, the quicker you knock them out, the quicker you can get back in. So I think I had 11 fights my first year as a professional. And something that most people don't know, when you turn pro, you're not making a lot of money.
Nothing.
So
no, I know that.
You got to keep fighting.
I was always curious, a little technical thing. Why'd you go from, what did you go from 160 to 147? Isn't it supposed to be the other way around? Like, you dropped weight to become champ. Usually it's the other way around. What was the, I always wanted to know the mindset of that.
I was 165 pounds in the amateurs.
Yeah.
I played football, and my dad's thing was, when I was a sophomore in high school, I tried to drop a lot of weight to get to 152 pounds.
Okay.
And I was just completely drained. So when we came back the next year, my dad's like, I'm going to let him fight wherever he's at. And I was weighing right around, playing football, right around like 168, 169 pounds. And so it was just easy to kind of get into, come off the football field and go back to boxing at 165 pounds. You fast forward, I turned pro. My dad, you know, doing his research, he realized he'll never fight at 168 pounds. Those guys are just too big. Mm-hmm. They're coming back to the ring at 190. He'll never fight at 160 because those guys are coming back at 180. His best shot is at 154 pounds. We get to 154 pounds, and it looks like I'm going to, you know, campaign at 54 and become a champion in 154. We fought on a showbox card, and my dad happens to be sitting with a pro with a showbox broadcaster. I don't remember which one it was. And the guy tells my dad, if you can get him to 147 pounds, not only will he be a champion, he'll be a superstar. And that was the worst day of my life, because that was the day that
your diet
my
changed.
Dad, something that my dad had never realized, had never thought of. And now I'm on this strict regimen of things I've never eaten before in order to make 147 pounds. I accepted the challenge, which was, you know, the other side of it. And we were able to do it.
Back to the early on fights, the 11 fights. You fought in Arkansas, Mississippi, Maryland. What was your first big arena? The first time you walk out like, oh, shit. There are a lot of people here.
Never.
Really?
Never. I've never had that experience, the complete opposite. I fought as early as the first fight on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And there were still fans in the arena. I remember fighting on the Bernard Hopkins card. I don't remember who he fought. It might have been Chad Dawson. And I was the first fight that night, got in the ring, and I saw Shane Mosley in the stands. And I kid you not, when I saw Shane, I thought to myself, my God, he's here to see me. Wasn't there to see me. But that's always been my thing. My thing has always been, I want that arena full when I get in the ring. So it's always been actually the complete opposite. If I got in the ring and I looked around and I could see open seats, it kind of pissed me off a little bit.
Well, your name's Showtime. Let's go now to probably one of the biggest ones in my backyard, the Barclays Center. When you win the fight, you beat Alexander, you win the title, how do you celebrate that night? Because you're in Brooklyn, you're in the Big Apple. How do you celebrate that night?
We, you know, it's a sad thing about me as a fighter. We never celebrated growing up. You know, that was never my dad's thing. My dad's thing was always on to the next. We would take first, take second, take third, take fifth in the tournament, never matter where we placed. We get home and we get right back to work. You know, my dad has never had a thought process to celebrate anything. So when we are up there now on the main stage, the biggest stage, and we win a world championship title, we literally go back to the room, the locker room, and it's like, you know, like, okay, we did that. What's next, you know? So that's always been a struggle. We didn't celebrate that first win. And even upon my retirement, I still haven't had a retirement party.
So even the second title fight. When you beat Garcia, you don't celebrate. Like, that's like, okay, I had the title, I lost it, I won it again. You don't celebrate?
My dad had arranged a like post-fight party at a nightclub.
Okay.
And we get in the van, and I'm thinking we're going back to the hotel room, and it's taking too long to get there. And we're in New York.
Of course.
It's taking too long to get there. And I look up, and I say, man, why is it taking so long? You know, I'm in the back with my wife, and, you know, I'm, you know, just trying to relax and decompress and stuff like that. Why is it taking so long? And my dad, with this big-ass grin, said, just sit back. We're going somewhere else. And I'm like, the hell we going? We end up going to a nightclub, and I sat there like, okay, I'm ready to go home. You know, never been my thing.
Question with the belts, because obviously I don't have a title belt. I know when you get the belt, you don't keep it that night. How long afterwards till you get the belt? What, do they just mail it to you?
Yeah. You get a belt mailed to you. There have been a couple fighters recently, definitely one that I saw, and he hadn't had his belt. He hadn't had his belt sent to him. It was what is his name? Something to my tongue. And they presented it to him at the WBC convention. Fights at 130 pounds, Oshaki Foster. He never got his belt. I think like 6 months went by,
no.
And he showed up at the WBC convention, and they presented him with his belt at the convention.
Because I would think the biggest flex, Sean, is you win a title to Barclays, you get the belt. I would show up because you're all cut up. You look sick, no shirt on, to the club with the belt on, and everyone's like, bro, you don't keep the belt that night. That's like the most disappointing thing.
Hey, you know, the belts cause attention. When I'm not ready for the attention, I don't want it. So that night, I definitely wasn't mad that I didn't have my belt. But, I didn't have the belt that night either. Yeah. You know, it's a part of it. I think that's something that most people don't realize and know, but you don't get to leave that arena with the belt that you left the ring with. Yeah.
Where are your belts displayed right now? Do you have them displayed somewhere?
No. My dad has.
I get so mad at this.
He has my first like five or six belts. I think first five belts. Those are displayed at his house. But the main WBC title, and I have two silver titles, those are at home. And they're not displayed because the home isn't how I want it yet. So
okay.
I got one more big move that, and then when I make that big move, then I'll kind of set things up the way I want them to be.
I have a question with your name. When your name got so heavy and so big, and you fought guys like Errol Spence, Terrence Crawford, we can go on and on and on, Danny Garcia, Keith Thurman, how do those fights take place? Are you going to your dad or your promoter and be like, hey, I want to fight this guy? Or are you like, hey, if I fight Bud Crawford, the pay-per-view numbers are going to be X? Like, how are those fights getting made?
Those fights are made through the promoter and the manager. For me, when it came to my fights, the only fight that I literally commanded was my fight with Terrence Crawford. Everything else, my whole career was whatever you give me, I'm going to take. I'm going to knock it out, knock it down, and keep it moving. The fight that I had with Terrence Crawford, definitely a intimate fight on a lot of levels. But for me, from a business standpoint, this was when I graduated from being told what to do and realized I have the ability to do what I want to do. And I should have the ability to do what I want to do. And, I really did. I commanded that fight. I sat still. My dad hated it. Management hated it. But eventually it came to me.
You talked about how fighters don't get paid a lot early on. Showtime gets paid a lot later on in his career. Dumbest purchase you ever made, Sean? Dumbest thing that now you look back, you're like, are you kidding me? I wasted my money on what?
Only professional athlete that has never done that. The closest thing to it, and I don't consider this a dumb purchase, but I do. It's kind of funny, but I do. I custom made a Porsche Panamera GTS, custom made. I designed it, and And then I realized and learned about finances and how, you know, blah, 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 blah. I was like, now I done financed this thing. I got it on a lease. I can't just go out and drive it whenever I want to. I'm paying insurance on it, and I'm driving it like every other month. And I gave it back to the to the car lot. But that probably the closest thing to it. I haven't made any dumb purchases.
Listen to me. You've been on now for 40 minutes, and I'm glad, and I hope you are, that it wasn't just like, hey, your fourth fight was this. I wanted to hear more about you as a person, the storyteller, the podcast, the suits. Ready to finish up with some quick hit questions. John, you and I are in a bar in New York City. You don't bring the belt because you're humble. Who's the coolest person in your phone that if you texted them, they're texting you right back? You got a name drop for me.
A lot of people, and they all – they always get right back to me too. Who would it be? You know, funny thing is, I had Shaquille O'Neal's number and I lost it.
Oh.
So let's not talk about who I can text. Let's talk about who I can't text.
Fair.
I don't know who the coolest person would be. I don't know.
I think Bud Crawford's a good one. That's a good answer. But you don't want to put a boxer in there.
No, get out of here. I have connections to Tyson. Roy's in my phone.
See, that's a solid. So you're five drinks in, and we're like, yo, Sean, you really know him? We might get you to FaceTime Roy Jones at the bar. That's going to be the goal when you get to New York.
Roy 100% is answering the phone.
That's a great answer.
Yeah, he's 100% answering the phone. He doesn't expect me to be drinking. Doesn't come to my rescue. I don't think. He might reach out to somebody and say, yo, go get Sean out of there. Yeah.
How about this one? Everyone asks us to take pictures with you. You're Sean Porter, the former champ. Last time Sean Porter asked someone to take a picture.
But don't do it often. I'll give you one. You're familiar with Charles Woodson.
Of course, yeah. Number two for Michigan, Heisman Trophy.
Favorite football player of all time. And next is Barry Sanders. But I had an opportunity to meet Charles Woodson. I wore the number two because of Charles Woodson. I had the opportunity to meet him at Fox Studios. I said, man, you're my favorite football all the time, man. I got to get a picture with you.
Now, is being an Ohio guy, is that even allowed?
Listen, we made exceptions for that young man. All right, goddamn it. We made exceptions for him.
Last show, Sean Porter binged watched.
No, he's from Ohio, right?
What?
He's from Ohio. Did you know?
I did not know that.
From Fremont, Ohio.
Oh, so now you're just trying to find loopholes that you're allowed to take pictures with Michigan guys. That's all right, Sean.
I'm telling you how I got where I am.
All right, last show you binged watched.
I've always binge watched. It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia.
Good show. It's funny. It was actually voted like best comedy show. It's a good show. I never watched it.
It's a great show.
How about this one? Coolest piece of memorabilia that you own besides the belts.
Memorabilia?
Yeah. Do you have any?
I have a autographed glove from Freddie Roach.
That's a good answer.
I have an autographed football from Ray Lewis.
Those are really good ones.
Yeah.
Those are really solid ones. All right, two more. Any arena or venue you wish you would have fought at, but you never did?
I think there's two.
Okay.
I think one is definitely, I know that one is Madison Square Gardens.
Of course.
Is it Garden or Gardens?
Garden, MSG, Madison Square Garden.
The MSG. I've never fought the MSG. I think that might be the only one.
That's the main one, right?
Yeah.
And finally, Sean, to be generic, there's a huge fight coming up. If you were a betting man, not as a fan, Bud Crawford or Canelo when they fight?
Crawford.
Oh, I hope you're right, bro. I hope you are right.
I think that I'm right. I think he's got a unique set of skills and internal skills that are needed to be someone like Canelo Alvarez, even in a decision that most people don't think he could get.
Jonah, I hope you're right with this. Listen, this was an absolute blast, an honor on my end. I hope it was fun for you and a little different. We got to talk about every single thing besides your amazing career, because that's been done over and over again. Not that you need me, but give the plug for the Instagram, the podcast, and everything else in between.
Man, Showtime Sean P on everything, and the Port Away podcast on YouTube. It's on all of the podcast platforms. Our new episodes come out every Monday, and we also have a membership on our YouTube channel. It's $9.99 a month. Interviews like this right here that I'm going to get with Terrence Crawford will only be exclusive on our membership channel. So definitely want to thank everybody out there for listening. And I'll say this too about the Port Away podcast. The most important part of the Port Away podcast for me is the motivational message that I do at the end of every episode. And I've even had people tell me that they don't watch boxing. They always fast forward through the show just to get to the motivation. And, that's my purpose. That's why I'm here.
Sean, this was so much fun, my friend. Hope you enjoyed it.
Thank you, man. I did enjoy it. Thank you very much. Hey, listen, here's a quick thing about this film that I'm going to do. The writer is from Reno, Nevada.
Okay.
He lives in Virginia. You got time for a quick story?
Always, come on.
Okay, good. My next appointment is full, so I have time now anyway. He's from Reno, Nevada. He lives in Virginia. It's a whole long story how I came across this film, man. It's amazing how I came across this film. But here's the funny part. He was a football player, and creative writing was always his thing. He would write little he wrote films and scripts and stuff like that. He gets out of writing, just he's a fireman and he's living life. He's done writing, and his mom randomly calls and asks, "Hey, are you still writing?" He says, "No." "Why not? I don't want to do it anymore." "Or you should get back to writing." He says, "Now, doing this, doing that." She says, "How about this? How about we make a deal? I'm gonna challenge you to write a script. I want you to put that script in a festival, and if it wins, you got to get back writing."
Ooh.
He wrote a script. He put it in the festival. It won. He got back to writing. This gentleman is not a boxing fan, doesn't watch boxing, didn't grow up watching boxing, knows very little about boxing.
Okay.
He decides the next script that he's going to write is going to be a film that in, that a script that includes boxing. He knows nothing about boxing. So he starts calling around, asking people, "Hey, do you know anybody that boxes? Do you know anybody that can help me? I'm writing a script and I need to know more about boxing." Leads him to somebody I've known since 2005, one of my best friends in boxing. And one of my best friends in boxing starts getting online with him, telling him about the boxing and how it all works and all that, so on and so forth. My best friend tells him, "Hey, listen, if you want to write a boxing film, you should talk about the amateurs. No boxing movies talk about the amateurs." So in this movie is this core of boxing that goes back to the amateurs and how in order to become Floyd Mayweather, you have to be an Olympian, And my best friend calls me on the phone. Hey, little brother, I'm helping this guy write this movie, and it's a boxing film, and da 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 da." He's super excited. He doesn't know that I'm interested in acting.
Oh.
So the script is done. He's just excited. "Hey, if you sign this NDA, I can send you the script." Sign the NDA. He sends me the script. I read the script with my acting coach. My acting coach says, "Damn, this is a damn good script." He said, "Who wrote this?" and so on and so forth. I said, "How did you get it?" I said, "Well, my best friend helped him write it." "Oh, your best friend's writing?" I said, "No, but my best friend knows boxing. The writer didn't know boxing." My acting coach, he looked at me just like this. He says, "You gonna read something? You gonna do something?" I said, you think I should? He said, hell yeah. I did a monologue. We recorded the monologue and we sent it to my best friend. My best friend calls me immediately. Holy shit. What are you doing? I'm speechless, little brother. Like, what is that? I said, yeah, man, I've always wanted to act, man. You know? They had Austin Trout cast as the lead of this movie. Going back to the writer felt like something else that boxing films don't do. They don't cast boxers as the lead in the
Never.
Films. So he wants to cast a boxer as the lead in this film. And the long short from that is, respectfully, I'm a little bit better than Austin Trout, you know?
A little bit.
And he sent it to the writer, and the writer's like, man, who's this kid? Who's Sean? And so on and so forth. We all get on the line, and that's how I got connected to this movie.
What an interesting backstory that is.
Yeah.
That's wild.
The reason why it came up in my mind is because when he wrote the movie, he wrote it as a movie in New York. And I talked to him. Essentially, I got friends in New York. My plan was just to get on the line with them and listen to them talk and, you know, just pick up their accent. And and I talked to him. I said, man, listen, I said, it's going to be hard enough for me to convince people that I'm actually acting and I'm a character in a movie.
Now you're doing language acting, yeah.
On top of that, I got to convince them that I'm a Staten Island kid. It's never going to happen. I said, let's drop the accent. I said, if I can just be somebody from New York without the accent, cool. He said, yeah, cool, no problem. We've gone from the film being in New York to the film being in Baltimore, because that's where Tank was exploding. The core of this film is very Baltimore-ish. It's very New York-ish. We got friends in Dallas. We take a look at the tax incentives in Dallas. The tax incentives in Dallas are better than the tax incentives in Baltimore. Baltimore's better than New York.
Yes.
I called a writer. This was sometime last year. I said, hey, man. I said, I'm getting this crazy feeling, man. I think that this film should be done in
Bro, Vegas. The ball's on you, Sean. To not even be an actor. Now you're telling the director, hey, we're going to do it here now.
It's crazy. It's unreal how this thing has really just snowballed. And it's like I told you before, like,
that's exciting.
These are the things that keep me in the faith of, and I know that God is real.
Yeah.
I told him, I said, man, I'm getting a crazy feeling, man. I just think that this movie is supposed to be done in Las Vegas. He says, I'll take a look at the tax incentives. I'll take a look and see if it all makes sense. This movie was a $6 million budget film. He took a look at the tax incentives. Vegas is better than Dallas. Dallas was better than Baltimore. And the list goes on. Then we've been having a hard time getting the funding for this film. Mm-hmm. So he's like, well, let's see if I can lower the budget. Because we're going to do it in Las Vegas, he can take that budget from $6 million to $1.2 million.
Over a $4.5 million difference. Holy shit.
You get everything, and there's so much access that we have in Las Vegas.
Yes.
That everything that we would have had to have done in New York, where we first budgeted it, so on and so forth. Mm. My son, I'll keep going if you want me to. In the movie, I have a son that I didn't know I had. And my son, the school that he goes to, it's not an arts program, but everything that they do is like surrounded around performance and arts and stuff like that. I told the writer, I said, hey man, I really think my son can be my son in the movie. He says, man, I'm all for family being in the film. So at the least he can be in the movie. He said, but you know, we'll definitely see if he can handle, you know, being your son in the movie. Well, I went on to just randomly record my son doing things from time to time. And I said, I'm telling you, this is Trey. This is Trey. This is Trey. And he said, man, that really is. as I look at your son and I look at what I wrote, your son is pretty much what I was writing. His energy, his mannerisms, the way he speaks, the whole nine. I said, I'm telling you, man, I just know what I know. God has given me the ability to discern and know what I know. I said, that's going to be my son in the movie.
Wow.
And I told Diggy about it, my son, and Diggy's super, super excited about it. Me and the writer get into a conversation, and I said, Trey, is Trey 6 or is Trey 7? He said, Trey 7. I said, man, I said, good, because my son just turned 7, and I was worried that he might be aging out of being my son in the movie. He said, no, your son's, you know, bright, it's perfect. In the film, Trey's birthday is in January.
Don't tell me.
I said, did you know that? I said, did you know my son's birthday is in January? He said, no, I didn't. I said, man, I'm telling you, man, there's just too many things that make sense about this. It's just
that's
crazy.
There's a difference between a coincidence and that. That's wild shit, man.
Yeah.
Sean, I look forward to whatever you do next. We're going to keep in touch, bro. God bless. This was so much fun, man. I hope you enjoyed it.
I'm going to make sure that my assistant gets you my phone number and my address so that we'll be a little bit closer.
Sean Porter, this was a blast, bro. Showtime Sean Porter. Thank you, brother.
You got it. Take care.
Be good, bro.